All right, so Tuesday, May 9th, it is the When Soon Show, aka Leo Finance AMA, and we are 1 week into the new UI being live, and it is living up to its title of live beta, as we are waiting for some UI issues to get worked out. Everyone wants the thread storm, and I want to look at my long-form blog profile because...
You can see it already.
The old cat wants to stay looking at his old stuff. I'm not trying to get on the site right now because I figure it's already getting overloaded enough with people trying to get on and the UI being fixed. There you go. New hobby, breaking Leo. It's almost as cool as Breaking Bad.
Should be any minute now that we get the Threadcast live because we are deploying a bunch of updates to Threads and the Leo UI as we speak.
Yes, I need to be distracted instead of just staring at the Tesla chart and watching it just grind lower so far all day. Sad face. I should have speculated on a put to offset my long calls.
Yeah, Tesla looking interesting.
Markets down today on a whole. I mean, everything got open lower.
Yeah, S&P down 0.5%. Nasdaq's not down too bad.
No.
Bitcoin's down kind of big.
I was going to say Bitcoin's down as well. I mean, hell, this is Bitcoin's
down like 10% last couple of days.
Yeah, well, we've four straight days of red candles, assuming this one closes red today. I mean, we still got, you know, a good 7-8 hours. But I did a thread yesterday. Mentioning that, you know, we were back towards the lower end of the range, you know, that like 27K area. So, you know, we'll see. Last time it pretty much touched 27K and then rallied. But I mean, 26, like 7 is kind of really the absolute low of that upper range there. So if we do see 27 or high 26s, I'm probably going to actually do a little dollar cost adding, since I continue to do that manually instead of on autopilot. And then we'll see. Obviously 25 would be the level below that, and then on the upside, you know, 29.30 is the upside resistance.
So if we break through like 27, which is kind of like, I just shared a little chart, like kind of like you were saying, bottom of the range,
yeah,
recently, kind of for the past 3 months, where do you see us going, like 24 or lower? Because 24 is kind of like the upper range that it was at before.
Yeah, like 25 pretty much, like 25 down to like 24.5 is pretty much that next area of all the action. I mean, I have my like trend line drawn at literally like 24.9, kind of coming off the tops back in February and then back in August of last year.
Yeah, and we obviously didn't see $1 million Bitcoin, like Biology was saying. So that bet, if you guys missed it a few days ago, that bet came to an end, and he paid out, I think he ended up paying out $2 million.
What?
Yeah, it was either that or 1.5. It might have been $1.5 million in his bets.
I mean, how I wish I could have got on the other side of that bet. Bitcoin at a million, I would have taken that bet all day long for as much as I could have put on it.
Yeah.
Because considering that I was willing to take bets that Bitcoin wasn't, like, in the last bull market, I didn't think Bitcoin was going to hit 100K.
Yeah.
And I was telling people it's not hitting 100K. Like, I thought like 85 was like the stretch top. And that's what I was looking for in terms of like cashing any out. And obviously we didn't get there. But man, I got to like pay attention to social media more. This is like easy fucking money. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's just dumb.
I mean, it was definitely a cool marketing play for him. I mean, you know.
And in the end, he might have made more money off of that. Yeah.
Right.
He might have made more money from all that attention. You know, right. It's like cost of marketing. Think about it. Instead of paying for the marketing up front, he basically paid for it on the back end with the possibility of him not having to pay anything. Actually, sort of genius in a way, assuming that it worked out for him. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, well,
I don't even know who this guy is.
I don't agree with Suniska that it was the worst bet ever, because he, if you think about it, like a lot of people speculate that he has billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin already. And he's the former CTO of Coinbase, so he's obviously got a nice stack of Bitcoin. So people speculate, like, okay, he's got, you know, thousands of Bitcoin probably. And since, you know, when he started the bet, I don't remember what month it was, but Bitcoin was like around 20K, I think. And Bitcoin went up to 30K. So it's a 50% increase on potentially, you know, hundreds of millions or even billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin. So he, I mean, within a day, he made back more than $1 million in net gains.
That's actually
right?
True. Yeah, I didn't think about it. I was thinking about in terms of marketing and potential, like whatever, if he's selling something or whatever it is. But yeah, that doesn't even matter. He booked. He was like, you know, forced to sell at a profit to pay these bets, but he still made money because he made well more than what he had to pay out. So
right. So I mean, he was well hedged because he essentially he had no losing scenario in this bet, because even if Bitcoin were to go down, he got all that marketing attention, all the followers, all the awareness. He was on, like, he did a huge circuit on podcasts and stuff like that. And then the reality is that Bitcoin actually went up like 50% from when he did the bet. So he more than made his money back in terms of gains, on top of all that free media attention that he got. So.
Yeah. I mean, the bet as a standalone is a horrible bet, but then when you filter that into his, you know, ecosystem, it actually makes a ton of sense and is pretty, pretty genius.
Yeah. I think he made out pretty well at the end of the day.
I mean, Flynn mentioned he doesn't see much support till 21K. I mean, I don't disagree with that, because everything I'm looking at as quote unquote supports are really potential, their former resistance levels, you know, tops, pivot points. But generally, you know, resistance becomes support, support becomes resistance. You know, is it guaranteed? No, but that's the first point you look at and then see if it plays out. So, like, that's why with 27K, when we, you know, first pull back after consolidating, and we failed at like that 30 and change, I was looking at the 27K and it ended up playing out. You know, we bounced off it at least once, you know, back a couple weeks ago, like April 24th, 25th, around then. But yeah, there was no guarantee that it was any kind of support. It just was a potential support and it played out. So now it is support though, because I mean, essentially it's been kind of quote unquote tested twice now. Whether we hold it or not is a whole nother story, but it's not certainly like a major, major support. But yeah, as far as like major support, the biggest major support still is down at like 2021. There's so much price action on the daily chart.
Yeah, even the amount of volatility we're seeing is really wild.
Yeah, like when you look back to like June of last year, there's, you know, a consolidation level where like 28K was the quote unquote bottom, you know, and like 31, 32 was the high side. And then we broke down. That's when we broke down and crashed down to 19. So, you know, just when you start factoring in that, it makes it super convoluted, especially because like there was no price action up there until, you know, late March of this year. So really that price action was kind of valid. And it's one of the reasons why I'm looking at like 32 as like the bigger upside in terms of like, you know, people talking bull market or whatever. I'm like, I think we need to establish above 32 before I'm getting like long-term bullish. And that's not even a guarantee because there's so much price action at 34 with big reverse pivots back in 2022. There's just so much action on the Bitcoin chart when you look at like over the last year. Yeah, it's crazy that Bitcoin is up 67% on the year, because I feel like, I don't know, I don't even feel the impact of it. And I guess the value of my Bitcoin is obviously up a lot, but I guess.
Yeah, I think that's kind of one of like the interesting points is that, you know, it doesn't really feel like we're in a bull market, but if you would have come out of, you know, if you would have forgotten about the last bull market and come out of the previous cycle and said that Bitcoin would just kind of hover around 27K and nobody would be excited about it, that would have been crazy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's kind of how it all goes though, because, you know, people get used to a certain price and then, you know, at 27K, you still feel like Bitcoin's kind of cheap, you know, relative to what it's been at. But if you go back even just, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, Bitcoin at 27K is like the peak. I think it goes to show you how much biases play into investing, especially in something like Bitcoin that moves so quickly. which is why I always preach having like a preset plan for what you're going to do, because in the moment, I don't think you can make rational, good decisions. I think you can only make those like pre things happening. So like, for example, for me, I just have a rule, you know, under 30K, I'm pretty much just dollar cost averaging, getting more Bitcoin. And then, and then like when we get over, 40, 50K, I'll start dollar cost averaging out. Same way I got in, I'll get out. And I'm not going to get out of my whole position, but, you know, small chunks.
It's funny. I bought some at like 29.3 a couple weeks ago. And obviously, you know, that purchase price is down, but I bought it essentially to add to my DeFi loan so I could essentially borrow more against it. I was like, let me add to this a little bit so I can borrow and not, you know, raise my liquidation price, keep it under a certain level. I'm looking to buy some more around 27, and I'll probably do the same thing. I'll probably add that to my vault, and then there's, I probably might not borrow against it right away, but at least I'll have, you know, more leeway. It'll knock down my liquidation price. And then if I want to borrow again, I got wiggle room.
Yeah. Smart.
So I saw PayPal, apparently PayPal's crypto holdings increased by 56% in Q1 of 2023 to nearly 1 billion. So they have, what is it, claiming a combined total of 943 million in crypto assets as of March 1st, 2023, which means that was hell over a month ago, which means they're definitely past a billion now.
So what are they, what is PayPal holding?
I don't know. Previously they disclosed 604 million for Q4 of last year. So that means they have 350 more in crypto holdings already. According to Forbes, PayPal crypto considers its crypto assets safeguarding liability due to the unique risk associated with cryptos. We allow customers in certain markets to buy, hold, sell, receive, and send certain cryptocurrencies as we use the proceeds from sales of cryptocurrencies to pay for purchases at checkout. These cryptocurrencies consist of Bitcoin, Ethereum, Bitcoin Cash, and Litecoin. So they have basically a billion worth of cryptos held in PayPal amongst those four cryptos.
Yeah, I think
Hold on. It gives a breakdown. 499 million is Bitcoin, 362 is ETH, 82 is Bitcoin Cash, and 82 million is composed of Bitcoin Cash and Litecoin. And that is, every one of them's up. Hell, Bitcoin, December, they had 291 on the books. Now they have 499. So it's a pretty big jump.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot more companies getting into crypto, you know, despite all the regulation. Like regulation, one thing I've noticed is that it ebbs and flows, right? Like people are all hot on, you know, regulation crackdowns, but then, you know, it's kind of like it's its own version of the crypto cycle. And then, you know, regulation starts to cool and then all these companies get in. And once you have enough, I think that Bitcoin, you know, not speaking about, you know, certain altcoins, but at least Bitcoin, I think, has the positioning to, you know, have critical mass in the legacy markets where, and legacy companies where I just don't see it like going under, for example, like where they just do a full scale ban. I think we've already reached critical mass and surpassed it.
But yeah, it's ironic. PayPal's actually down today because they just reported earnings last night. And even though they topped estimates, margins came in light. So the stock's getting wrecked, which is exactly what happened to Tesla. You know, they met or beat numbers on earnings and revenue, but the margins were light on expectations. And that's been the big thing people are paying attention to, is the margins, because, you know, in this inflationary market and all that stuff, if margins begin getting eaten away, that obviously is bad for future earnings. So that seems to be the soup du jour this quarter for Wall Street, is paying attention to margins.
Yeah.
Nice. Flynn's investing internationally. I've been to Argentina. I went to Buenos Aires once. Pretty cool city. And yeah, I do believe, I think, Cal, was it you and me that talked about this? If not, I might have been talking to Neil. If you look at like emerging markets and versus US, like a chart, there's like almost like this 7 to 10 year cycle where one outperforms the other. and U.S. stocks have grossly outperformed essentially the rest of the world over the like past whatever it is, 7 to 10 years. But you're starting to see like almost like a crossing on the chart. So the reality is, over the next 5 years, if you're just to take a real top level macro investment stance, you're probably better off being in foreign investments over U.S. stocks right now, like being in foreign stocks over U.S. investments. I mean, and granted, you know, that depends on the country, but you can just do kind of like some kind of, you know, ETF, like as opposed to holding the S&P, you're holding like whatever it is, you know, a Euro ETF or some shit like that. But yeah, it was pretty interesting and it makes sense. I mean, the bottom line is there's asset rotation, sector rotation, right, within the U.S. market. Why wouldn't that happen worldwide? And it does. So, you know, there's several years where, you know, energy stocks outperform, and then there's several years where tech stocks outperform. And then why wouldn't that be the case for there being several years where U.S. tech stocks outperform? And then after that, you know, European stocks, or, you know, Latin America, or, you know, whatever, China.
Yeah.
So I got to stop poking around at that, and think I want to get myself some, because I have like zero foreign exposure when it comes to investments.
Yeah. I mean, I used to have a little bit in terms of like TradFi. But yeah, I don't really have a whole lot these days.
I mean, I guess crypto counts.
Right.
Because crypto is worldwide.
Multinational.
And even though the UI is not working right now, seems like people are enjoying it. I know thread activity has definitely continued to rise.
We deployed some updates actually this past week for notifications to make them a little bit smoother, fix a couple bugs. The month of May is going to go down in history as Leo bug month, where we squash as many bugs as possible. That is the focus this month. And yeah, I think, like I've said a few times, the theory behind what we're doing right now is we are in a live, definitely a rough beta. It's not going to be super smooth. And, you know, even like the blogging thing, like a lot of people complained about not having the right tools to do long form or see long form. Obviously, long form is on the UI. It's probably like the number one question that I get is why is long form not on the UI? And that just tells me that people aren't really exploring the new UI. Because literally the second link, if you look at the menu, is explore, which takes you to long form. And then if you hit publish, the biggest orange button on the UI, if you hit publish, that is the long form publishing page, which a lot of people ask how to get to. So
yeah, I actually have the opposite problem. Sometimes when I want to thread, I hit publish thinking it's going to bring up a thing for me to thread. I'm like, oh wait, this is long form. I just need to hit the, so then it's like, all right, I hit the home button and then boom, I'm able to, you know, thread. You know, why is actually that tag called explore? Because you're not really exploring. I mean, it's taking you to long form. I mean, I guess you're quote unquote exploring long form, but it's not like, I would think explore would mean I'm going to like explore multiple different options. So I guess I'm wondering, does it make sense to have that tag labeled blog instead of explore?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I love the name blog, but yeah, we might be able to come up with something better there.
Yes, blog is so 2005.
Yeah. Well, the idea is that as the UI matures, the long form will just kind of seamlessly be integrated. You'll be scrolling through short form and you might get suggested. This is actually a feature that we're working on right now, where when you're scrolling through short form, it'll actually start to suggest, you know, say like every 10 threads, it'll say, you know, suggested reading, and it'll like pick a random long form article and have it linked there. And that's going to come from the curated feed. So, you know, that it's like high quality content, but it's kind of mixed in with the short form a little bit. And it's trying over time, we're going to make it cater more and more to the user that is seeing it. So, you know, if the threads that you scroll through tend to be like crypto focused or technology focused or something, then it'll try to show you articles that are related to those topics that you thread about a lot, so that you can also kind of like flip into long form. Like the goal is like time on site, right? Like we're trying to get users to click more pages, click more threads, engage more, see more content that they're interested in, and really just keep them on the site. But yeah, I mean, like it's pretty crazy how much activity we've gotten on the new UI. I mean, that's why things are breaking right now, because we're actually overloading all the nodes that we're using. So even the Hive nodes can't really handle how many requests we're putting through. So one issue we've been having is the Hive.blog full node for Hive has actually started rate limiting us, because we're pushing so many requests with threads, because there's so many threads being posted and interacted with. So one solution we've come up with temporarily is to split the requests across multiple nodes. So we deployed it last night, but one of the issues that's having is that now we're having the UI basically flicker errors, and then you know, that's why you're kind of getting like bad gateway and other errors when you try to load the site. So temporary fixes are being deployed, and then the long-term solution is that we need to have our own full node, and we're going to work on that too.
Pal, your Threadstorm is not getting indexed.
Yeah, I know. We're just going to have to forego the threadcast, I think, today. If you keep refreshing the UI, you'll see that it keeps trying to update. So it's like right now it's an hour behind.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, we're trying to
get these updates
rolled out. I'm talking to the devs while we're live, so if I seem distracted, that's why.
That's funny. Some people said you should run your own node.
Yeah, so I announced that a while ago, but then I talked about it again yesterday. That we do have plans to launch our own node, because all the other nodes, they essentially look at it this way, like Leo Finance has grown so big, especially with this new UI, that we're overloading the nodes, like in terms of how much we're using them.
Break stuff.
Yeah, we are literally breaking stuff. So, and not just on our end. I mean, we're overloading other nodes. So they're starting to add rate limits for Leo Finance, just because they don't want their nodes to go offline. So that's why we started splitting requests. And then eventually we're just going to have our own full node, and we'll have to make it extremely large. But the good news about our own node is that we probably won't, we'll probably make it, we'll basically design it so that it's focused on things like threads and the Leo token transfers and stuff like that. So in terms of the types of requests that it will accept, we can limit it to basically like being like threads, it's like a full node for threads content specifically. So it's kind of interesting how we can segment that, and then we can scale it. Obviously we need to do a lot of work on scaling, because we went from having, you know, a few hundred threads a day to, you know, we're at like thousands of threads a day now. So we're at 31,000 monthly threads now. So I think we're doing good work though, because we're breaking stuff, we're fixing stuff, we're getting ready for mainstream.
But before we do that, so like we're talking about obviously the UI right now, and you know, these on the fly updates and whatnot. But obviously every week we generally talk about what the changes and updates have been since the last show. So I know every Friday basically changes are implemented. This past week's been a little different with the new UI launching, and basically just, you know, bug fix, bug fix, bug fix. But I'm assuming there are some items that have been updated and or changed. That is outside of whatever we've kind of talked about. So do you want to do a recap per the usual in regards to that? If there is items that we haven't touched on?
Yeah, let me run through a couple updates. Like I said, May is a big bug fixing month. That's going to be, you know, if you're looking for flashy new features on the UI, that's not going to be this month. We did, for the new UI, since we didn't really do an AMA last week, we did a launch party. I talked about some of the new features we did going into production on May 1st. So from you know, the end of April to May 1st, we released a bunch of new features. You know, probably the biggest feature that we released is the new Leo Infra. So we now have Google sign in, and we have Twitter sign in. We temporarily got rid of Facebook, and we're kind of considering if we want to add it back or not. Because we found that most people were using Twitter, and then, you know, just kind of looking at what people use on other websites, Google is definitely the favorite. So most people use Google to do those like Web2 sign-ins. So we're kind of focusing on these two for now, and then we'll kind of look into some other stuff later. And then we also have phone number and Twitter verification to create a Hive account. So there's Hive Lite accounts, which are Twitter and Google. And then there's the Hive, like actually creating a full Hive account with where you download the keys and everything. And that is that uses Twitter or phone number verification, basically just to keep people from creating unlimited Hive accounts for free. Those new login options are probably like the biggest update in terms of like features that you guys see on the front end. And then since then, you know, we've done stuff like scheduled posts. And then last night we actually pushed an upgrade that Mitch was asking for, which is the blog feed for each user. So if you go to your profile page now, if you can get the UI to load today, go to profile.
Sidebar, Cal, I do have it loaded right now in terms of a blog draft, because I'm starting to write the recap post, but I'm not going to lie. I'm a little scared, and I'm definitely going to copy paste before I hit publish.
Yeah, I would do that too. Yeah. So if you go to profile and then blog, you'll see your personal blog feed. So that's anything you've published, any posts you've published. The scheduled post feature is live. Drafts are live. What else have we pushed recently? Some updates to the wallet and adding more functionality. These updates are a lot easier to do when I can see the UI. We added the settings page, but you'll notice that most of the, actually pretty much all of them, except for light and dark mode, are grayed out. So that settings page is coming soon. And there's going to be a lot. That settings page is actually going to be extremely robust. You'll have a lot of different settings to choose from. At the beginning, you'll pretty much see the ones that are there right now, but probably towards the, you know, by the end of this year, there's going to be a ton of stuff in that settings page. I mean, it's going to be really crazy because and I've talked about this before, creating a modular experience. You know, my goal is to create, you know, every user who comes to the UI is different and they all want different stuff. They want to see different things at different times. And the goal is, you know, through the settings page and other mechanisms, we can allow the users to customize the experience that they're getting. And even down to things like maybe instead of the homepage being threads, you can choose it to be long form content. So a lot of really interesting stuff is coming for the settings page.
Well, that is a good question, Cal. Image upload from mobile, when in this universe?
Yeah, so if it's actually an issue with Hive Signer, I believe. So if you're signed in with a different method, from my understanding, you can upload images from mobile. But yeah, we are working on a bug fix for the Hive Signer login. Mobile is where all the issues have been worse. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely understandable. Mobile is always tricky on Hive, but we are working on it. I mean, the ironic thing is that I've been using a Leo Infra account to do some stuff on mobile, and it works really, really well. So it's a lot of compatibility issues with the existing login methods on Hive with things like Hive Signer and Keychain.
Interesting. I've never used Keychain on mobile. I mean, obviously, desktop, it's fine. Sam said, can the links to images be shorter when implemented? Because it takes a whole lot of character spaces, and we'll be left with only a few characters. That's interesting. So do those links actually eat up the character limit?
They do. So one thing that we are working on in the future is going to be when you upload an image, the URL for the image won't count towards your total thread character count. So you'll be able to upload, but there's going to be a separate... So we actually had this at the beginning. If you use threads in the early days, there was like a 2-day period of time where we had it set so that you could upload images and the image links wouldn't count towards the thread character count. But then someone basically took advantage of that and posted like 100 images into one thread because there was no limit. So then you basically they took the whole thread feed with 100 images. So we turned that off because we basically, the solution that I came up with, which we just haven't worked on yet, is to have a separate character count for links, including image links. So like any link will then be counted separately from your character link or your character count. So for example, like you could type, when this is implemented, you could type 240 characters of words, and then you could still add a link and it won't count at, towards that 240. Like it won't make you go over 240.
That is funny. Like you find the fix and then you can't use it because someone's always got to manage. And this is why we can't have nice things. All right. So while Cal is multitasking with the devs, and I know so many people are anxiously waiting, we shall announce the key words for today, which in some irony, touch on something we talked about just moments ago, which was nodes and Leo having their own nodes. So the key word is actually three words today, three separate words. Leo node soon. I am not the keeper of the keywords. I'm just the Amazon delivery boy. Yeah, I noticed that too, Brandon. It kind of drives me nuts because then you have to just exit out. But I don't know if you see what he said, a small thing, but when I reply to someone on Threads, the pop-up stays on. Could it perhaps in the future disappear automatically like it does on Twitter? I would also like that feature.
Yeah, I will. I've been meaning to write that down. So let me write that down.
Put it in the bug fix break stuff file.
It's not exactly a bug fix. That's going into our backlog for new features.
True. That's exactly. That's more of a desired design feature. But in the end, you know, any UI this is relevant to. You need functionality and it needs to work. But at the same time, the UI experience also needs to be enjoyable and desirable. I near my soul. I hate using the mouse when hotkeys. I'm old school. I over mouse use. I barely ever use the keyboard. It will speed up the threading if the response pop-up disappears on its own. Hell, there's been times where me and the little X have not gotten along and I can't even like get out of it. And I just refresh the whole damn page.
All right. I have a line on the problem if you guys are interested in hearing.
Sure, why not?
So we have done over 7 million calls to Hive nodes in the last 24 hours, 61,000 in just the last 30 minutes.
And apparently we broke the Hive blockchain.
Yeah, apparently there are close to 40 API calls per second. Which apparently is way too much. Devs are talking right now, and there's two solutions we're looking at. So we can come up with something where it basically fans out our API calls to the UI, the nodes, so that it doesn't overload them. So basically, like, you know, if Mitch and I both hit the UI at the same time, it'll say, okay, Mitch, hold on for an extra second, and then it'll put my request through, and then it'll put his after. So kind of like request priorities. The other solution is to run our own node. So we are currently considering both and trying to figure out which one we can get operational. Good break or bad break, asks Stevenson. It's a good break because it's ultimately a scaling issue. Like eventually we're going to have to solve this, you know? So this is the way it works. We've got this huge roadmap for scaling specifically. And as things break, we basically take some focus off of the features roadmap and push it onto the scaling roadmap. And we say, okay, you know, we need to take a day out of the week this week. For example, last week, a Nomad Soul broke polls. I think he got like 200 votes on a poll or something. And that was way over the limit of what we had scaled for. So then we had to spend a day scaling up polls. So now we're looking at a bigger scaling issue, which is the whole UI and the amount of threads being indexed. Is actually just way too large. So this is like a big time scaling thing. It'll probably take like 1 or 2 days to fix. These things have to break at some point for us to scale them. And really, if you look at anything, like even in the early days of Twitter, you know, they had scaling issues and they had to scale up. And a lot of times we forget about it because it's, you know, Web 2 and it was different back then. But, you know, it's, you know, same story, different platform.
Yeah, I mean, none of this is a surprise at all. In fact, these are all good things because, you know, when it comes to the Hive blockchain as a whole, there's been so much discussion about this. I know Addicted has talked about it in length amongst others. And, you know, Hive is great and all because we're in our little Hive ecosystem, but it's like, what are things going to look like, you know, when, let's just say, it goes viral and the usage 10x's in a short period of time, you know, from everything from resource credits to, you know, the type of issues that we're having right now. So it's good that Leo Finance is breaking stuff now because A, that is not only giving the Leo Finance team answers on how to better move forward and, you know, what changes need to be made. But on top of that, I think it also is probably poking Hive nodes because they're essentially getting new information, you know, to work with that wouldn't be happening otherwise. So that is how, you know, we're growing.
Yeah, definitely growing.
It's going to be funny thinking like, you know, think about like a year or two from now, you'll look back on days like today and just be like, remember that time when the whole UI was down and we had a live call going?
Yeah. And I was live fixing it.
That's pretty fun. The growing pains.
Oh, also I have to mention, there is now the Choose Your Own Adventures are live. They just dropped this week. So if you feel like you can't win the Zeely campaign, you are incorrect, friends, because there are 70,000 total XP available through these adventure side quests. So if you wanna earn big, you know, the $10,000 prize pool, the 200,000 Hive Power delegations, the Hive Fest raffle tickets, Leo delegations, and also NFTs for every boss that you defeat. There are rewards on rewards.
Damn, 200,000 freaking Hive Power delegation.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
If that would have clicked in my head, I think I would have joined in on the campaigns.
Worry not, Mitch, because you can still join the campaign today and win. That's Eric's message. Is that
more work?
Yeah. But you know, one thing that he and I have basically talked about, and we did a live stream where we talked about it, if you want to go back like a week or two and watch it, is that no matter what stage of the campaign you join, if you put in any amount of, you know, moderate effort to the campaign, you're going to win something. So it's really, you know, if you do want to win some rewards and also in the broader impact of, you know, cause there's this selfish aspect where, yeah, you can earn, you know, huge rewards and there's a huge reward pool that we put towards this thing. The other aspect is more of the non-selfish aspect, which is, you know, you are doing activities that grow Leo Finance. So things like all of you guys that are here for the live stream right now, to complete a Zeely quest or, you know, promoting a tweet. Like yesterday I put out a tweet about the Leo tokenomics, which we should talk about real quick before we jump off. I put out a tweet about the Leo tokenomics and it absolutely exploded in activity. There's like over 100 replies, over 100 retweets, and hundreds of likes and like thousands of views. So we literally made that tweet go trending because of Zeely and Eric put up a quest for it, for the daily quests. Yeah. So, you can kind of see a little bit of the vision of where we're headed with Leo Finance and with marketing. We have this amazing, massive community of core users, you know, the 1,000 true fans that are here. And, you know, up until now, there's never been a good way to leverage all of that activity and put it toward, you know, basically we have this core community base. And instead of having kind of like this AMA, we have like ADD focus, like everyone else is focused on something else instead of all focused on the right, you know, not the right, but the one thing, right? So if we can kind of take that ADD attention and then kind of focus it in on specific laser tasks, it's kind of like a laser beam where if we can focus that light and energy onto specific tasks at specific times, like for example, promoting a tweet, then we can generate a lot of traffic, a lot of marketing, a lot of activity. And the cost of it would be giving away Leo or Hive Power delegations or Leo Power delegations or NFTs to people on Zeely. So if you think that this is the end of Zili when this campaign ends, you are incorrect. Zili is going to be a completely ongoing thing. But this campaign is like our kickoff, right? It's like our kickoff event. If you want to earn big rewards, you got to get in on this one. And also the XP that you earn in this campaign will also count toward future things within Zili, because you have like an all-time leaderboard. So, you know, this is not just like a quick hit type of thing. Like Zili is around to stay for the foreseeable future. So I highly recommend being involved in the Zili campaign. I have an alt account that I'm doing Zili stuff with. Obviously, it's excluded from the rewards pool. But I've been doing a live stream, not a live stream, but like a live walkthrough every day, posting a video of me doing a couple different quests each day. So now that the Choose Your Own Adventures are live, I'm going to start doing a bunch of those. So expect a couple like 1-2 hour walkthrough videos from me this week. I'm probably going to do a bunch of quests just to prove that you can climb the leaderboard at no matter what the stage of the campaign is. I think I'm at like 138 right now or something in terms of rank. And my goal is to finish in the top 25. So obviously I don't earn any rewards, so I'll be excluded. Like the top 26 people will win or whatever, you know, top 100. But it'll exclude my account. So, but I just want to prove that even, you know, if I can do it, then you can do it. Let's put it that way.
Andrew's asking about the 200K hive power. I mean, so that's between what? It was, they call me Dan. Who is it? Someone's going to do a 100K hive power delegation. And then I believe Leo Finance is doing the other 100K.
Yes.
I don't know if that all goes to one winner or if that is split up amongst winners.
Eric can talk about that specifically. I believe that it goes to two different communities. Stevenson, I think it's for two different communities, but let's let Eric confirm that.
That would make sense. And also, I mean, any questions? Because Eric's kind of, they already said yes to communities, since he's kind of like in transit right now on mobile. Any questions that don't get touched down, if you put them in the Zila campaign Discord channel, then they'll end up getting addressed. If anything does slip through the cracks.
And then another thing Eric wants me to talk about real quick. There's going to be a post from Atleo Finance today talking about some updates to curation with Atleo.voter. And we are switching the way that curation is done in a lot of ways. We've heard the feedback about curation and how a lot of people feel like their content gets missed, and also that upvotes seem to go to the same authors and they feel like it's not getting spread well enough. And, you know, there's the one thing about curation is that there's always going to be complainers, but you know, when there are people that are giving like good feedback about what could be done differently and what is wrong with what's happening now, we definitely listen to that feedback. So Eric came up with a bunch of really cool methods to decentralize the curation a lot more. And instead of having you know, one small group of people doing the curation, there's going to be a lot of different ways that it's done. So it's going to be different groups of people and different methods of curation. So without going into the details of it, you'll have to keep an eye out for the Atleo Finance post later today. But the six different ways that curation will be done is stake-based, which is based on your Leo power, ambassador curation, outreach-based curation, engagement curation, leaderboard curation, and community drivers. So I'm not going to really go into details about that, but you know, you're going to be able to get upvotes based on how much Leo power you have, based on how much engagement you've done in the last week. There's going to be a leaderboard every week of, you know, who's posted the most threads, who's replying to the most posts, stuff like that. And then curation will get spread a lot more. I don't want to say fairly, but I want to say that curation will get spread more in a meritocracy, right? So that not only will you have to post good content, you'll actually have to be like an engaged user of Leo Finance, which is how it should be. Scaredy Cat. Read your username. It's funny because I can never decide if I want to say Scaredy Cat Guide or Mitch.
Cat. Most people just say cat.
The cat. So the cat just posted in Discord, meritocracy is how Ray Dalio ran Bridgewater Associates, which only grew to be the biggest hedge fund in the world. Exactly. I'm actually a big fan of Ray Dalio. So yeah, I mean, it's a full, this curation is going to go really forward on the meritocracy idea in terms of like, you know, if you're doing stuff within the community, then you're going to see a lot of upvotes. And if you're the type of person where you're just posting, you know, a long form post on Leo Finance and you don't tweet it out, you don't engage with people in your comment section, you don't reply to other people's long form posts, you don't thread at all, you don't hold any Leo power, like the odds of you getting a lot of upvotes is going to significantly be decreased. But if you are doing those activities, that means that your upvotes are going to be significantly increased. Yeah, a Nomad Soul said meritocracy based and gamified. Very much gamified, very much a meritocracy. If you are not active in the community, you're not going to, I would not expect to see a lot of upvotes coming your way. But if you are active and you're doing good things for the community, then you're going to get a lot of upvotes, which is the whole point of Leo.voter at the end of the day. Like, a lot of people ask, why do we even have delegations? Why do we even bother? The point is that Leo.voter is supposed to encourage activity on Leo Finance and build our community. So we are implementing these six different ways to basically make sure that Leo.voter upvotes are actually building what we want it to build, which is deeper community and wider community. So yeah, full curation revamp. It's going to be huge, as they say. And kind of
huge.
And kind of on a similar line, I put out a tweet, and Eric promoted it with Zeely. So that's the one I was talking about that blew up, about Leo tokenomics. So I will grab the link for you guys, put it in Discord. But yeah, this tweet blew up. So the inflation for Leo dropped from 25,000 tokens per day to just under 5,000 a day. And the reason why is because the bounties fund is now over. So all the Leo that comes in now is for the three rewards pools. One is the mining token rewards pool. The other one is the biggest one is the author curation rewards pool. And then another small one is the wrapped Leo geyser pool. So those are the three methods that earn Leo now. And that breaks down to 5,000 Leo a day. And like I said, the majority of it is the author curation pool. And then the way that delegators get paid for Leo.voter now, the APY remain the same. So if you have Hive power and you want to delegate it, you can delegate to Leo.voter on Hive, and you earn 16% APY. And that 16%, instead of coming from the bounties fund, it now comes from Leo that is bought every day. So Leo.voter curation rewards are used now to buy Leo every single day and then push it into the bounties account, which then pays it out to delegators. So if you run the math on that, it's about 15,000 Leo per day that has to get bought off the market and then sent to delegators. So run the math for yourself that the inflation is 5,000 new Leo tokens every day, but the 15,000 is getting bought back. So buybacks are three times as much as inflation now. Some people said it's kind of like deflationary, which it kind of is, but instead of the 15,000 getting burned, it's getting distributed to delegators. Yeah, I'm excited about the tokenomics changes. That was a big change that we kind of snuck in with the new UI. I had talked about it a few times, but we snuck it in with the new UI. And you can see that chart from that tweet, which is from the @leo.stats post. And you'll be able to see those posts every week from @leo.stats, such a tongue twister, where the inflation dropped very significantly. So a Nomad Soul, he keeps giving me more shit to say. So I did see a question about the edit button and a delete button. So there is an edit button coming, and that edit button is going to be based. You'll get access to the edit button if you have over a certain amount of Leo power. So we haven't decided what that amount is yet, but let's just say like you have to have more than 5,000 Leo power in your account to have the edit button. And other features like that are also coming in the future. So instead of, yeah, exactly, Stevenson. Twitter has Twitter Blue where they charge you $8 a month. Leo has Leo power holdings. So instead of paying every month, you just have to have a certain amount of Leo power staked in your account. And if you have that amount staked, then you'll be able to access more premium features on the UI. So things like an edit button, things like a delete button, and all sorts of other stuff. And, you know, maybe even like priority threading, stuff like that. Like the use cases that we can push to Leo Finance now are endless. And that's kind of the whole point of the Leo token. It's a utility token within the community that's meant to give you more access, more features, more power within the community. So that is my long final rant of all the things that Eric wanted me to say live on air.
Boom. Well, that is good because we've been going for over an hour at least, and probably start working towards wrapping this up. I dropped the link to the recap post in the chat.
And just in time for us to go off air, the UI is back online, friends. So
there it is.
Some bad news, but it will get fixed soon. We had to remove the blog profile post page because it was, we just had to reduce some of our requests to the Hive nodes. So temporarily offline, but everything else is back to the way it was basically from a day ago.
So, yeah. All right, cool. Yeah, so next Tuesday, the 16th, we'll be back, and ideally we'll be thread storming with a live UI. The UI seems like it's good to go now, so throw in your threads in the thread storm to wrap up the show, and you know, we'll see what new features and updates we have come this time next week. And in the meantime, let's get those thread numbers up and get more people to join the thread party.
Get busy threading or get busy dying.
There you go.
Sweet.
Cool.
We will
see. All right, everyone. Thanks for coming out. 16th. Yeah.
All right. See ya.
Take care.